Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, time value of money. This is the first lecture where you will access one of the Excel templates that I've created for you to be able to do the math. Instead of trying to do it, paper and pencil would be ridiculous, but a calculator or even a financial calculator is cumbersome and it's not generally used in the workplace. It is all centered on Excel. And quite honestly, I have altered the way I teach, starting about now in the course. I'm teaching a very different way from how I would have even 5 years ago, based upon the importance of having you know how to use Excel in a work environment. And some of these are like mini versions of what you would actually use for certain types of finance problems. And so that's a new thing, and the criticism is still out there of relying on Excel. But if I'm going to get you ready for the actual real world, then you got to know how to use Excel. And that's hence why the certification and all of that good stuff. However, that comes in just a little bit. We're going to look at the numbers here for just a few minutes and do a few updates on some of the companies that are of interest right now based upon what's happening in the United States and the rest of the world. But first things first is, if we look at the other side of the world, this thing has just popped up here, Japanese, and I'm not sure what they are referring to. Before I start talking about it, I want to know what that's measuring, because generally, Japan, we look at the Nikkei 225. Do you notice the screen is vibrating? Is there like something happening? Yeah, I mean, actually, now that I'm looking at it, it makes me want to hurl. I mean, I'm not going to. Whoever is out there twitching, quit it right now. Okay, but where was I? Nikkei 225 is what we usually use, and as you can see, it had a mildly up day. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it was a decent little day up. The Hang Seng actually tried to be happy, and then it finally lost its momentum, but it did gather its steam near the end of the trading day, which was late last night for us. But going over here, a couple of features. Obviously, we want to look at Europe, Euronext, and that had a nice, smooth, up day as the European Union is getting more and more confident of its ability to function as one of the putative leaders of the world. Interestingly, I introduced you to CAC last week. Now, technically, CAC is stocks on the Paris Exchange, but these are stocks. It's sort of like the Dow 30. These are giants. So this measures European large oligopoly action. Companies like, as I said, Renault, Michelin, L'Oreal, they are in the CAC 40. And so even though it's technically Paris Exchange, it does measure a good chunk of the pulse of the super large corporations of Europe. And then, of course, you go over here, FTSC, it just didn't have any will to do much of anything today. It bobbled around. It was down just a tiny bit, 0.07%. You come over here, and the Dow, near the end, there was a late bull rally, and it managed to climb up to about 0.11%, okay? So it wasn't anything spectacular. Now, the S&P 500 was up a respectable nearly 0.5%, and, of course, the NASDAQ, which usually is up more, was up. Actually, it came close to up almost 1% for the day. As I said, these stock indexes move of their on the moment's information. They are not long-term views. Remember how I told you the stocks can be undervalued or overvalued. And overvaluation is just the result of looking at short run and the prospects for success in the short run, but does not look so much at the long run. You have to look a little bit deeper to see where the long run is. Going down here, though, we have a couple of features let me point out. First of all, gold. As I told you, the neckline is up there at $4,000 a ship per ounce, and it is just on its way there. As you remember last week, it was like 3,500, 3,600. Now we're in the 3,700. It just keeps marching upward. When gold does that, it means that there is a sector of the investment community that believes that the economy, economic circumstances are going to get very dire. Gold is the flight, ultimate safe harbor in the flight to quality. Remember, from stocks to bonds, bonds to gold, gold to bullets. And so that is just saying that there is a building sentiment within the hardcore investment community that believes that things are going to get bad. Gold is also a hedge against inflation. We are pretty sure that we're going to have another bad round of inflation, and we won't even know it from official government statistics because they have become completely unreliable. You're just going to have to see it with your own eyes at the grocery stores and all of that. A couple of other things. Oil. You notice how oil, if it seems like you're looking at the same numbers as you were last week, crude oil and the more specialized Brent. Is Brent still even listed now? Yeah. They seem to be going nowhere. That's exactly what it is. The oil producing and exporting countries, OPEC Plus, with a few other countries in there, led by Saudi Arabia, they are making sure that the world is swimming in oil. They are cranking the spigots. There is a ton of oil in the reserve tanks, on the high seas, in the refineries. They want to keep that price of oil low. And eventually, that chokes out all of the competitors, the landmen, the wildcatters, the small operations, even the large operations in some cases. They want to wreck it. And they do this. It's not something that's new. They do this every 5-10 years. They just choke it until everyone's out, and then they can skyrocket the price of oil by just turning off the spigots again or slowing it down a lot. And we'll see it. It doesn't happen overnight. Maybe a year. They're going to wait until there is nothing happening anymore. One of my a longtime associate of mine still, well, he's not in oil and gas now, but he says, yeah, right now no new leases are being picked up in the oil patch. They're just not going to do it. And those who are in the business, they're packing up. They're running out. They're going to bankruptcy. A lot of the oil people are losing their homes right now. It's because the price of oil is too low to be profitable for those companies like that and for those operators out there on the fringes. So there you are. And some of our biggest trading partner for oil that buffers us from oil supply shocks is none other than Canada. And we have pissed them off really bad, so they just don't consider us a reliable partner anymore. So there's where we stand on that. Let me take you over for a little bit of a visit to a few companies. Starting out, I want to just touch into the auto industry just for a minute, just to give you the update on Rivian. Now, here's the thing about Rivian. First of all, before you even look at numbers, do you see how volatile that is? It's insane. You don't go to rodeos to see that much volatility. And here, you've got a nasty high beta, 1.81, and you have negative profit. They're losing money, so we don't even have a PE ratio we can use to see anything. They don't pay a dividend. The only way that stock is going to make you money is if the price goes up. Now, right down here, you see that Yahoo's forecast is that the stock price today is $13.60, and they're predicting in a year it's going to be $13.86 or $85, something like that. In other words, they say this is a terrible investment. You're not going to make anything. That's what they say. A one-year hold would make you pretty much zero in this. The question for you, this is one of those where you can use your judgment. This is not an amateur investor's stock at all. It is dangerous because they are unprofitable, they have no dividend, and their beta is way up there in the sky. This is one of those fun time stocks. If you believe in this company, you think that it is going to make something of itself, you decide I'm going to buy 10 shares, that's $136 that when you put it in, when you give that order to the broker, you know that you are not going to ever see that money again. But you'll still do it if you are a high risk taker, because it could very well go up a lot. But you have to walk into an investment like this completely convinced that you'll never see that money again as long as you live. So there you are. Now let me switch gears. Let me show you the effects of some of what's going on that has a political foundation, but we care nothing about the politics. What we care about is making money, sound investments that are going to appreciate in value over time. I'll begin with one, mRNA, Moderna. Moderna was one of several companies that benefited from subsidies that were provided by the federal government during Operation Lightspeed, which was initiated by President Trump in his first term in office, to get a vaccine for COVID developed. All of the major companies went the route of the mRNA technology, which is essentially the new technology that is replacing the killed virus technologies, which replace the live virus technologies. And no, you're not going to turn into an aardvark getting them. However, they were cut off, those subsidies were. Now, Moderna was on the brink of vaccines for a lot of other things. Another company in this game was Pfizer. They were both benefiting from subsidies from the U.S. government to get it done. Another one in the scramble was Johnson & Johnson. AstraZeneca was in it. There were a couple of other companies in it, too. So what happened to Moderna when the subsidies were ended? We'll go over here and we'll have a look. This is what happens to companies, and I'm going to show you another industry that is in serious trouble, too. Moderna. This is a one day. Notice how volatile it is. Notice the beta is terrible, and now it's losing money hand over fist. It was developing technologies for everything. They were working in early stages on cancer vaccines, on a vaccine for HIV and other long-term difficulties. Now let's have a look at the 1 year. It's skidding because it's just now down, it's just flat. It's just lying there on the ground. Not a good investment because these large companies that were doing this research were not going to do it without some kind of juice to help with the bill for them. One that was in the race, Pfizer. Now Pfizer is going to, you're going to see it sliding, but not as much, because Pfizer was a more diversified company. It had lots of different medical-related stuff. So even though it took a hit from the, well, let's go to year-to-date. As you can see, it took a major hit, but it has recovered quite a bit of that simply because they do have other things that they sell. So that's some good news. Now let's switch over to another sector entirely. We'll look at the agricultural sector. Here's the state of it out there in the fields. It's harvest time. The crops are abundant. This is a banner year. If you go out there in the fields, you'll see that corn is gorgeous. Those soybeans are fantastic. Well, those soybeans, we sold a huge amount of those soybeans to China. China has just told us to kiss its ass. Those beans will not be harvested. The term that is used in some parts of the country, they're going to be dusted. It's going to be plowed out and dust flying in the air. And the farmers are going to have bankruptcies, massive numbers of bankruptcies. So here's one of the big ag companies, which depends upon those farmers. We'll look at ConAgra. And let's look at the year to date. As you can see, ConAgra is collapsing. And the stock price has lost a huge amount. Because those companies, the farmers are not going to be there after this year. Farmers are who buy the products of ConAgra, and consumers do too. But a huge amount of that business was selling those beans overseas, in corn, overseas. And now those overseas entities like China, well, they saw it coming. Now they are making contracts with Brazil and with some parts of Eastern Europe to get their beans. And so they will never come back to us again. They won't. We're not going to just lose the market for a while and then they'll forgive and we'll all do all kissies and it'll be over. The same is true in oil. We did have a reliable partner in Canada. Canada pumped a lot of oil down here for us. We've pissed them off and they now, no, well, you want to do this to us and threaten to invade us, they're not going to do it. So these are the markers that tell us one side of the story. Now you can argue on the other side, and I will do that in subsequent lectures. However, you're looking at what you need to look at. It doesn't matter the politics. What matters is how much you are going to make. Are the investments sound? Investment in agricultural stocks? You're seeing it with your own eyes. Probably not a good idea. Investment in biotechnology companies that are doing things that require assistance from the federal government's funds, probably not a good sector. Where will you look for good sectors? We'll talk about that in the next lecture. But this is how we look at the world. We don't care about the politics. We care about the effects of it. Yeah. Okay, enough of that. On to bigger and better things. What I want you to do right now is I want you to do your attendance radar, get that out of the way. Is that what? Yeah, something is vibrating. It's probably the air conditioning. Good, well-built building. I mean, I was looking through. Okay. While you're doing your attendance, once you got that done, I want you to go to your Canvas. And once you're in Canvas, I want you to go to your Files folder. Go to Canvas, go to your Files folder. Now, in your Files folder, you're going to have to feel around to get to your spreadsheets. Click on the Spreadsheets subfolder. Now, in the Spreadsheets subfolder, there are some that are just there for other purposes. But there are five core, I think it's five, maybe six, core Excel spreadsheets. And we do those one at a time for, as the subjects come up in the chapters ahead. These are Excel templates that I have created for you. and they do the legwork of the calculations. However, you do have to know where to put the numbers, how to determine, is this a right answer? Does this look good? Or have I put something in wrong? And fundamentally, you have to know how to turn a word question into a math problem. As I used to teach four decades ago at the Ohio State University when I was a math teacher, most students were very afraid of word problems, or what we called back then story problems. And my method was, you get the numbers out and then you throw the words away. And that's the same thing I tell you here. Without further ado, the first one we're going to use is called the present and future value. Don't click on the link there. Go over to the three dots and download it. And what comes up is this enable editing, of course. This little bad boy here. A couple of preliminary things about this, just FYI. First of all, do you know what would happen if you put anything into an orange or a blue cell? Here's what would happen. You would die. I say it like that to convince you, don't. And if I could, I would program it so that it would at least make you have a bad night of terrible dreams. Don't ever put anything in here, into these blue or orange cells. And that leads to the second thing. Whenever you work with one of these spreadsheets, you might want to save it along as you're doing work in it. But save it under another name. Don't just hit the save button. Do save as. That keeps you from, if you did make a mistake and overwrote a formula, you would not affect the core sheet. In fact, some students, and I think it's actually kind of a good idea, maybe every week or so, just download it from the Canvas site again, just to make sure nothing is corrupted. And besides, once in a while, I think of something else to make it a little easier, and I tweak it. So it doesn't hurt to even just download it again. But definitely stay away from these cells right here. The other part of this is you notice that this one has a number of different moving parts. That's good. As I had said, the way I teach this class, using Excel, I am teaching it in a fundamentally different way from how I would have taught it even 4 years ago. We've moved that enough into this century that going back and giving you historical knowledge about, well, we used to use this, it's not going to do you any good when you need to master this. And almost every corporation is living off its Excel, and it expects you to have mastery of it. I may have mentioned it a while at some point before now, but about 8 years ago, maybe it was, I got a story from one of the very big companies here in town, one you may not have ever even heard of, but it's very big. They hired a fellow. He said, I know Excel, and they believed him. He went, and his first foray into the company worksheets, the company sheets, as they call them, he just started putting in things randomly, changing numbers, thinking he was doing a great job, and then he did something really bad. He saved it. He just hit save, which saved it as the master template for everyone in the company to access. And then, before anyone knew what the idiot had done, the automatic backup kicked in, and the backup was on the server. So it turned into a nightmare for the company. Needless to say, they fired his ass. And now they are much more careful. When you say, I know Excel, everyone says that. What I want to make sure is that, one, you're certified, and two, you're using it in my class. That way, there is a level of guarantee when they want you to be able to handle Excel that you really can do it. Anyway, okay. Where was I? Okay. About this. In the first worksheet. Now, some people call these the spreadsheets, but the older term was the worksheets in the spreadsheet. I have broken up the problems that you would face into present and future value of a lump sum. In other words, a single pot of money. For calculating a present value, you are going to get money out there sometime in the future. And what you are doing is you are finding out what that is worth now. That's a present value of a lump sum. On the other hand, a future value of a lump sum, you've got money now. How much is that going to be worth in the future if you put it in the bank, which would be the best thing you could probably do with it? That's all it is. You're dragging money back to the present, or you're throwing money out there to the future. That's all a present value and a future value do. Now, the annuity version, the term annuity means a cash flow. It's going to happen over and over again. For example, you get an annuity, which is called your paycheck, every 2 weeks, every month, whatever. That's an annuity. And then you loan payments. That's an annuity. How much are each of your payments on your car or your home? So here's the thing, is that these two put together constitute the core of the time value of money problems. And back in the day, and I will tell you this, groaning about the past, this was a lot like work. And in accounting, they are still... Tell me if I'm wrong. Are they still using tables of present? Okay. We don't do that anymore. And well, they have to use tables or they don't. Well, where do those tables come from? Well, I don't know. They came from a computer. You know, come on. And we're just upping the game so that you can get down to more business. 50 years ago, you would have had to know how your car worked on the inside. Now you have mechanics that do that kind of stuff. Anyway, that's the whole point of this, is you're using Excel to simplify the back end of the operation. Let me bring up a couple of things here. And also, on this second one, the payments on a loan are such a classic and commonly used annuity that I make them their own little panel in the middle. Because there are so many ways that you can use that it's just easier just to make its own little place in here instead of trying to work it out as a present value problem on its own. Okay, a couple of little... I am going to retain one fossil and give you a basic formula that is for a lump sum and then make a couple of points about it. A future value of a lump sum is the present amount, the present value, times 1 plus the periodic discount rate to the number of periods. This is the periodic discount rate. This is the total number of periods. The periodic discount rate is the APR, annual percentage rate, divided by the number of compoundings per year. And the total number of periods, that thing is jiggling. Total number of periods per year is just the number of years times the periods per year. So let me explain. Suppose that you had an APR of 12%. Okay. Compoundings per year. So the R and the T. Suppose you had one compounding per year. It's the annual is the APR. Well, that would mean that you would do 12% divided by 1. And the T would, let's say 5 years. Just as an example. The T would be 5 times 1. There are 5 periods if each one is an annual. Now the next one is 2 compoundings per year. The term used is semi-annual compounding. Semi-annual means 2 periods per year. And I will say it that way, semi-annual compounding. That would be 12% divided by 2, and the number of periods would be 5 years times 2 periods per year. 10 periods in all. Now, the next one that's common is quarterly. That would be 4. So our periodic interest rate would be 12% divided by 4, and you'd have 5 times 4, or 20 periods over the 5 years. Now, here's one, semi-monthly, 6. That's a little unusual, but I'll just bring it in here, 12% divided by 6 and 5 times 6. The next big one, is 12. That is so common. If I say monthly payments, you just automatically put a 12 in the slot there in Excel. So that would be 12% divided by 12, or you would have 5 times 12, you'd have 60 months over a 5-year period. It gets a little bit hairier from here. There's one that has some use sometimes, biweekly. In other words, two times every 2 weeks, I should say. Where you see this is if you're working and you get paychecks every 2 weeks, you might see an annuity problem that was biweekly. I'd say, okay, you earn your paycheck is $600. Paid biweekly. That would be 26. The next one is weekly, 52. And the last one that I might bring up is daily. Daily would be 365. However, this one has an odd trick to it, and I think this edition of your textbook, it was in the last edition, they mentioned something in banking that for the exponent, you take the number of years times 365, but for the periodic discount rate, you would divide by 360. And I think they still do that in this latest edition. I forgot to check when I was reading through it to see if they do. There's the reason it's 365/360 is that the quick reason is, well, there's 360 banker's days in a year, five traditional holidays. The real reason was that the number 360 has a weird way of having a trick for using it as a divisor. And I only vaguely remember it. But yeah, the 360 was traditional. It was actually used way back in time. The reason we have 60-minute hours and 60-second minutes goes clear back to Sumerians, whose entire number base was 60. And it just ran through civilizations ever after that. 360 just keeps showing up because it's kind of an easy number to divide by. And like I said, I can't remember exactly how it was. Oh, let me while I'm remembering it. That's future value. A present value, all you do is divide both sides by that mess right there, and you get the future value divided by 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of periods. So that's the formula driving those spreadsheets there. One quick thing to mention. You may see me write this FV over 1 plus R to the T as FV times 1 plus R to the negative T. If you remember from algebra, the reciprocal is the negative exponent. I show that, and I actually use the formula that way. You might even look in there. I've baked it in a few places. Dividing by a complicated little expression is just asking for a mistake, forgetting a parenthesis or something like that. So we usually, if we're actually calculating, we use the negative exponent. Just the way we do it. So, down to it. Okay. Use a couple of real life examples. Some examples. I don't know. I'm looking for someone. I guess I should probably use you, madam. This is really weird. I found out that you're my daughter. Look, I was lonely. I made decisions. It was dark, too, and it was Decatur. Every time I do that, I get this, my mom's from Decatur. Yeah, I know, I met her at a truck stop. Look, I feel bad about, not contacting you ever in your life, but, I was busy. But I am planning to leave you money in my will. $1,500,000. That's the good news. The bad news is that I am not going to die for 20 years. That's pretty bad. I'm old. You know that, right? I'm so old that I went into an antique shop and the owner tried to sell me. Okay, fine. Anyway. So you're asking yourself, what is that worth to me now? Well, what we're really asking is, if you got a certain amount of money now and you put it in a bank, how much would that have to be worth the $1.5 million in 20 years? That's all a present value is asking. Let's say that we have 20 years, and you could put that money into an account that paid, let's say, 4.09%, and the CD says compounded, let's say quarterly. And the amount is $1,500,000. If you took $664,725 and put it into a bank account that I've described here now, in 20 years it would be worth exactly $1.5 million. As you can see, this finance isn't opinions. It's just scientific math. That's what you will have in 20 years. We can tell you right the exact amount of money. Other part to this. Let me bring up one thing here. What was I thinking about this? Oh, I know what I was going to say. Is look down here at the bottom. You see that 4.15%? That's called the effective rate. In contracts, we call it the effective percentage rate, the EPR. This is the rate that is equivalent to 4.09% compounded quarterly. It's the annual equivalent. Now the formula for that EPR is just 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of periods. No, nothing on the front. Don't let me bluff you by giving you a money number. It has nothing to do with that. You're just finding a one-year effective rate. That's the formula that's driving what I put there. It's calculated for you. In fact, in recent years, most states have required that loans indicate both the APR and the effective rate, the EPR. And even in advertisements now, I think it's the law here in Illinois, because I've been seeing it show up in car ads, get your loan here kind of ads. So you can see that that rate is usually more than the, it will be. If your compoundings are once a year, it will be the APR. The EPR and the APR are the same if you have one compounding per year. The EPR is larger than the APR if you have more than one compounding per year. Watch this. Let me show you. If your account had one compounding per year, watch what happens. See, they're the same. But as soon as you have more than one compounding per year, the EPR starts to climb above it. That's just the mathematics of it. Make sure you have that in your notes, because I always ask something like this. It's just a gimme if you got it in your notes. Now, a future value. Future value. What would happen if I threw money forward? Suppose that I got $5,000. And if I left that in the bank for 5 years, and let's say that I had, it was compounded weekly. And I would put it into a CD that was paying, let's say, 3.79%. In 5 years, that would be worth $6,000. In other words, I'd make about $1,043 on it. A note here. Finance math has a hidden bonus in it. You see those exponents over there? If you put in a number incorrectly, the answer will look way wrong. You can look at an answer. Does that answer make sense? If it's some millions of dollars or it's just a couple of pennies, you probably put in a number wrong. You can have at least some assurance that it's the right answer if it makes sense. My favorite story was some years back in this very class, in this very room, one of my students on a quiz got a monthly payment on a car loan of over $10,000. And I said to her, does that make sense, even make sense? And she said, I don't know, my dad pays my car payments. And so I went back to my office and took some Tylenol. And, okay. Let's go over here. Let's do a car loan. I'm going to do the middle panel. And this is one that is actually, you might want to keep around. Let me think. Where should I fatigue someone with this? He's pointing at you. Madam! You are driving an old, ugly car. As a matter of fact, in Brooklyn, You know, we'd see a car burning beside the road and we'd slow down. We weren't there to help. We'd just yell out, "Is that your mama's car?" And then we'd speed up. Okay, but yours is even past that. Okay? So you decide you're going to go to a car dealership and you are going to buy a car. I'm the Kia salesman. "Why, hello there. What do you want to buy?" And you say, "I want a Kia Soul." I look at your car and I look, "Don't you want something that's not ugly?" Sorry. Yeah. You know, they do recall for ugly. The government does. Anyway. Okay, so we decide you're going to get yourself a Soul. I mean, you have one already, but I'm not going to, you know, comment on. Anyway, we're going to get you a Kia Soul. Now, tax, title, out the door, you're going to get a loan for the whole amount, and we work it out that that Soul is going to cost you $24,400. And you wanted to do a 6-year loan. Now, here's the key. Almost all loans are 12 months. Really. So don't even ask, what are the monthly payments?
Put it in the blue.
I did? Control Z. Don't push me. 6-year loan, 12 monthly payments. I really did put that in the payment. There. Boy, that was lucky. Lucky I caught that. Quit it. 12, okay. Recovering from that interruption, 12 monthly payments. That's really traditional. Home loans, car loans. I just say, what are the monthly payments? Just automatically put a 12 in there if it's not already in there. And let's say that your APR on the loan is 6.79%. And you're getting a loan for $23,400. There's your payment. That's all there is to it. And in a way, it seems like, well, I should teach you the formulas, have you do it on a calculator. Why would that happen in this day and age? So the upshot here is that this is what you should use. Now, when I say, let's do ourselves a quiz, now this one would be the first one where you will need to have this up and running, this spreadsheet. Nothing else on your computer. If you have notes, make sure you print those out. But this should be up and running for a quiz, for a midterm. In fact, I will give you, for the quizzes and midterms, I will tell you, you need these sheets up and on. You don't want to go after you start the quiz, what the hell am I supposed to do? Get the Excel sheets up and running before the quiz starts. And I'll tell you what they are to get up. This one for the next quiz, a week from Wednesday, this one you need. And look how fast it comes out. It just speeds out when you do it this way. This is one of our productivity, just a force multiplier in productivity in the modern corporate workplace. So that's why I am making it so that this is how we do it in the classes at a world-class university. Okay, so annuities in general are, I will get into those in the lecture on Wednesday, but annuities are, it's just a stream of cash, a cash flow. And I mean, technically a lump sum is an annuity with one component, if you want to be trifling about it, but yeah. Now, the next one here in this list, let me show you this. I created an amortization tool for you. In other words, this can calculate payment by payment, how much of each payment is going to interest, how much is going to principal, based upon how much you borrow, and the APR of the loan, and all of that kind of stuff. You put the numbers in here, and this will tell you what your balance is every month. This was a 20-year loan. No, this was just a car loan. Yeah, this was a matter of fact, this was, I actually set this one up because this is, I talked to a dealer about a Ridgeline, and this is roughly what he was giving as the terms of the loan for a $44,000 loan. And so I just ran it through. All I have to do is put the numbers in there, and look what happens. It just takes them down. The rest of it, the tail, that's just, you know, that's just part. That's just there because I set it up so that it could go as far out as a 30-year mortgage loan. So this should be able to get you through any problem you would have, where you would need to create an amortization table, because back in the old days, these were a real pain in the butt, month by month by month. How much of your payment was going to interest? How much was going to principal? And what was the remaining balance? And I strongly encourage you to look at the formulas that I'm using to get those. Okay, let me take it back here to perpetuity. By the way, if you ever see little pound signs, all you do is go up here to the middle, right between the two cells, the two columns, double click on it, and it's just telling you that the cell was too small. That's going to happen if you make it in one computer with one computer monitor and then you pull it up in another. Don't panic if you see a bunch of pound signs, just double click. A lot of you probably already knew that, but I do have the question from time to time. Now, in the perpetuity, a perpetuity is an annuity that goes forever. It never stops going. If it's a $50 annual perpetuity, you would get $50 every year forever. Now that sounds at first blush like it has no use. First of all, the biggest, most important use of it is in accounting, because every accounting class where you are learning accrual accounting works on the assumption of perpetuity. They call it the going concern assumption. In other words, I can recognize accounts payable because the concern will still be going in the next period. And in that period, it will still be going in the period after that. Essentially, accounting is a method of maintaining financial records that assumes perpetual everything. Now, in the real world, there are loans that are perpetuities. The best example was a loan that was taken out by Napoleon long, long time ago. He wanted to have a war. And this is something that was happening even in the Middle Ages, ever after that. Kings and queens and emperors and nations, they liked to have wars, but they didn't have the money to pay for them. In the Middle Ages, they started going to the wealthy families that were developing and the guilds that were flush with money to have a war. England wanted to have a war with France. Well, the King of England would go to the Beermeister's Guild and borrow the money. Well, Napoleon, he went to borrow from a very powerful, wealthy family, and they gave him a deal of a lifetime. They said, you never have to pay the original amount back. All you have to do forever is pay us the interest. That's all you ever have to do. Just pay us the interest. Well, that sounded like incredible stuff. Unfortunately, the problem was that they still have to pay it to this day. The French government, even some years back, tried to get a court to cancel the debt because it was ridiculous. We have to pay this every year to this family? No. And the court said, yes, you do. There's been a continuity of governance, and so this government owes that interest payment. A better and laughably awful example is Chicago. They wanted that beautiful system of roads up there, and they are fine roads, they are great, but they didn't have anywhere near the billions of dollars that it would have taken to do what actually got done. Enter the Saudis. The House of Saud said, we will provide you with the money, and all you have to do is let us have most of the tolls from the tollways and most of the money from the parking meters. And Chicago said, you're kidding, really? We get all that money for basically nothing? Yeah. But it's almost a forever deal. I mean, I think it finally does expire in 75 more years, but it's basically the perpetuity was worth hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars for a few billion to build that road system. Perpetuities, they really do exist. And in academia, I'll show you one, it's called the endowment in academia. They are very common, highly desired. And I've even got a place on the spreadsheet so you can see them. They're very cool, and they are perpetuities. So I'm not teaching you something abstract with perpetuities. They really do exist. I'm tired of you guys. Go home.